don't explode. You got your hands in my back pockets and Sam Cooke singing on the radio. You say that I'm the boy.
All right. It's Nick DiGiulio on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on a Thursday night into a Friday morning. All the regular Friday features will be coming up at 3 o'clock, which straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and of course, Fly Jams Friday, as we do every Friday morning starting at 3. Also, coming up on the show, we're going to talk about the fact that the McHenry Drive-In is going to be opening up again this weekend, which I think is going to be people are going to get out and want to get out and see. And Friday night, it's going to be free. The admission is free. And on top of that, they're hosting graduation ceremonies at the drive-in. They're really helping out during this crisis. So that's really, really, really cool. Best Buy is going to start reopening stores, but by appointment only, which is interesting. And gas prices are starting to get back up. They're ticking back up because the demand is rebounding. So lots of stuff happening out there. You know, my father works at Juul, full on mask, full on gloves, and he says business is really good. There's a lot of people coming out, you know, and they require now that you wear, you know, if you're going to go shopping, that you wear a mask. That's the new reality. And the other thing that's really fascinating to me now is, like, they're making designer masks now. Like, I have a Cubs mask and I have a Hawks mask. And I guess this is going to be with us for a while because it's like fashion statement now with our masks. So we'll talk about that and more. Mother's Day this weekend, so we're going to talk about the best TV moms of all time. And much more, like I said, the regular features. And also, we play Carson Comedy Classics here at 2:30 every morning, and Johnny Carson Show you can watch on Antenna TV every night. And I love Johnny Carson. I just love him. And we always play back some stand-up or some interviews. Well, tonight, from 1978, it's the best. It's Carnac. We're going to play back a little Carnac the Magnificent. So that's all coming up. Well, right now, I'm so excited to welcome back to the show. It's been a while since he's been on. Our good friend Stephen Tobolowsky, who's been in like 800 movies. You probably remember him best as Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day. He was in Memento. He's been on Seinfeld. He was in Deadwood. He was on Glee. He's on The Goldbergs, Silicon Valley. He works a lot. And we just wanted to talk to Stephen and catch up with him for a while. Stephen, how are you, sir?
I am doing good, Nick. I think the last time I saw you, maybe we were having dinner together outside WGN or something.
Yeah, we had dinner. We had dinner with my former producer Dan Chagrou. We had dinner at the restaurant that was in the Tribune Building, and I can't remember the name of. Howls and Hood. Howls and Hood. That's where we. That was the last time. I think that was the last time I saw.
Correct.
Yeah. So how you been,
man? I well, of course, times are very weird. It was, you know, the best of times and the worst of times. We came back from the dead on One Day at a Time.
Yes.
You know, because last time I think I talked to you was right when we were starting the last season. And Netflix always kept their statistics private. But
you're right.
We found out from Sony what our audiences were on Netflix. And the first year on Netflix, we had 2 million viewers.
Mm.
The second year on Netflix, we had 4 million.
Wow.
The third year on Netflix, we had 8 million.
Wow.
And so I'm shooting The Goldbergs, the graduation episode last year, and I'm expecting any moment to get that phone call that we're doing a fourth season. And the phone, the AD says, we're going to need you in about 5 minutes. I go, fine, fine, fine. And I get the phone call from Gloria Calderon-Kellett and Mike Royce, our executives on One Day at a Time. I pick up the phone. Yes, Stephen, we're sorry to say that our little show is over.
Oh.
I'm going, what? And my heart, like, crashes through the floor. And then the AD knocks on the door and says, Mr. Tobolowsky, we're ready for you. And then I'm thinking, like, oh, and now I have to do a funny scene.
Oh.
So Netflix dropped One Day at a Time, and I went from being on top of the world to the lowest, you know, the nadir, if I can use that word on late night, the nadir of every, and then about 2 months later, I got a phone call to go to Austin, Texas for this producers convention, and our executives were there and said, Stephen, we've worked on dead shows before, and we've worked on near-dead shows, but we think One Day at a Time has a chance. And they brought us back, not on Netflix, but on Pop TV, kind of a Viacom kind of thing, CBS Viacom thing.
Right.
And so we have our fourth season over on Pop TV, and they're passionate about the show. They love the show. And so we did six shows, boom, 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 boom. And the coronavirus happened, and Sony shuts down, everything shuts down, and now we are just waiting to see when the world starts up again. I heard your news there. It sounds like Chicago's starting to open up a little
just
bit.
Just a little bit, yeah. We, you know, our mayor, who's doing a wonderful job, Maren Lightfoot, is wants everything to be safe. You know, we want the small businesses to get back up on their feet, and we don't want to the financial hardship to be too devastating. But we also want everybody in the city to be safe, and she's making sure of that as we slowly, slowly open up. I want to talk more about how that's affecting, you know, what's going on, you know, the current situation, what's going on in Hollywood. Stephen, hang on, okay?
Yep.
Okay. Stephen Tobolowsky is with us. One of my favorite guests and one of my favorite actors. And you've seen him in a million things. And I think probably most memorably, not most memorably because he's memorable and everything, but I think most recognized as Ned Ryerson in Groundhog Day. And we'll get back to that. We're going to talk a little bit about how the coronavirus is affecting the show business world, and it's affecting everything. So we'll talk about that as more and reminisce a little bit about some of the movies that he's done and talk about what he's going to be doing in the future. But everything's on hold right now, obviously, because of the situation, and we'll get into that as well. All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4, keeping you entertained, keeping you informed, and keeping you company. And we'll get through this together. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All the regular Friday features coming up after 3 o'clock and more. Stephen Tobolowsky is one of my favorite actors and one of my favorite guests ever. And it's always fun to talk to Stephen. So, Stephen, you know, how are you personally holding up? You know, everybody's stuck inside. So how you been keeping busy?
Well, I've been writing, you know, some of the Tobolowsky files. That's one thing massive unemployment does is you have a lot of time to do things like that. My wife and I have become like Farmer Jones. And, we have a garden out back and we're trying to grow things out of the garden. We just stay at home. I've never been in one of these illnesses where I'm in the crosshairs.
Yeah.
But I'm in the crosshairs of this one. I'm in my 60s. I had heart surgery. So, I'm just cordwood. I'm just ready for this thing. And so my wife and I, we have designer masks. I heard you talk about that. We got some pretty hefty looking masks here, and so we spend all day pretty much working inside, working on the house. My wife directs on Zoom; she's directing shows on Zoom.
Oh, wow!
And are you guys doing Zoom on your theater scene out there?
Well, a lot of people are. I mean, staying connected in that way, and it's amazing how you said the theater community. It's affected the theater community. It's affected everything, and it has people, you know, connecting with their family and their friends that they can't see. So, but that's interesting. She's directing via Zoom. How does that work?
Yeah, tell me about it. You know, I'm learning a lot by it, but what happens is she can get the entire cast on her computer screen, and they can rehearse scenes, and it's interesting. You learn a lot about theater by watching it on Zoom and why it doesn't work on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very interesting because on Zoom, of course, it's like only the person making the noise comes on. So they're the one whose picture you get. If you talk, you see their face.
Right.
And you realize in theater, the magic of theater is that you look at the people who aren't talking. And you look at the people who aren't talking for their reaction. I remember something that I never understood in school, in college. Stanislavski was talking about theater. And he says, theater doesn't happen on stage or in the mind of the audience, but theater happens in a flame that happens in between the actors on stage and the audience watching. And I never understood what that meant until I look at Zoom, in which the flame is gone. All you see are the faces of the actors talking, and you could make comments as to whether maybe they're making sense of their lines or not making sense of their lines. But it's very difficult to sense the scene because a great deal of the scene is the person who isn't talking. And so you get a much greater appreciation for what theater really is that silence, that amazing silence of the person who's listening.
Yeah.
That creates this. But other than that, I think they had some psychiatrists, something on TV, and they listed the five danger signs that you're losing it with the coronavirus.
Okay.
Like mentally losing it.
Yeah.
And I had all five. For real.
Okay.
No, for real.
Okay.
Like number one was that you dream about the coronavirus, like every night.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is you think you have the coronavirus several times a day. Every sneeze, that's it.
Yeah.
That you get inordinately mad at inanimate objects. I yelled at my front door the other day. I called it a stupid door. I mean, it's a door.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a stupid door or a smart door. The other one is that you shelter in place while you're sheltering in place. So if you're in a house or an apartment, you feel you need to be in one room or one corner of the house or apartment.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Me.
Yeah.
I'm right here. And the last one is, of course, drinking excessively. So we got all five of those going.
You got everything covered.
Everything covered. But I got to say, Nick, I've never looked better. I'm losing weight. I'm getting muscles again. I'm not sitting around. I'm working in the yard. So I'm as happy as I can be, considering it feels sometimes like the beginning of the end of the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody's got to deal with it. I'm glad that, you know, I mean, we're forced into this situation to think differently. We have to think differently now, Stephen. And it'll be interesting to see once this all goes away, how our behavior has changed, like without this. I think that's going to be fascinating.
What do you think? I've been asking all sorts of, what do you think is going to be one of the things that stays once this whole period is passed? What do you think is going to be one of the keepers?
I think that there's going to be more empathy, and I think people will recognize the essential workers.
Wow.
I think the people are going to recognize the essential workers, and I think we'll continue to, because now people are starting to realize, you know, like what the people on the front lines do, and the truckers, and, you know, my father works at a grocery store, bagging groceries, and he's been wearing a mask and gloves and stuff like that, and those kind of people, the nurses, the people in the medical profession, the people that keep it going, I think we're going to realize that we took them for granted, and I really think and hope that we will have more empathy and more appreciation for what they do.
That is fantastic. I wish the same thing. You're right. This crisis has forced us to look at people who are usually not in the heroic role,
right,
as heroes.
Right.
Whether it's even people working at the damn grocery store.
Yeah.
You know, with the masks and the gloves and everything, bagging your groceries. Certainly, my son, William, my youngest son, just graduated from Johns Hopkins Medical School.
Wow.
And yes. And so he's been calling me every week with the latest. And next year he begins his residency at Johns Hopkins. And they said, you're front line, man.
Mm.
You're going to be one of the front line. And it's like, okay. And the people who did not see themselves in heroic roles are in heroic roles. And I think, you know, for me, the things that draw that made me cry was in New York, when New York was in such amazing crisis that all of those nurses and healthcare workers from all over the country went to New York.
Yeah. Yep.
They volunteered to help.
Yep. It's amazing. It really is amazing. So the situation is really, how is it have you talked to some of your colleagues in the world of film and television, and how they're handling it and what's going on with the business?
Yeah, I'm trying to get whispers, and this is the latest I heard, is that you have Dick Wolf and all of his productions, including all the ones in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, Dick does all the shows in Chicago and in New York. And Ryan Murphy, who did Glee, he has a lot of shows in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And those two producers are powerhouses, and they have lots of shows in production. And so the whisper I heard is, especially Dick Wolf in Chicago, he wants to get started in July, is what I heard. But they are, if those two guys could come up with a plan to work safely, then everybody's going to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
But they're kind of looking for those two to step their toes into the water first, because they have a lot of shows riding on it.
Yeah.
I heard, for example, one plan I heard was that they're going to test everybody with the antibody test. They come on the set, and if you have a positive, you get a certain kind of bracelet. And if you don't have a positive or nothing, and you haven't had the disease, you get a different kind of bracelet, and you are tested for the disease every day.
Mm.
And you are given spot fever checks throughout the day. And you do the social distancing. Now, I don't know how that's going to work. It's interesting. I had this maid a long time ago, Nick, and her name was Minnie. And I think she used to work at a hotel in Texarkana. And she was one of these sweet, sweet women. She never cleaned the house. But we never could fire her because she was so old and dear. We just kept her, and she would walk around and not do anything for the entire day. And I remember I asked Minnie, how are you doing, Minnie? And she would say, well, Stephen, my shoulder feels like it's 80 years old. My knee feels like it's 120. My arm over here feels fine, like I may be 30 or 40 years old. Stephen, you don't die all at once. You die in pieces, a little bit at a time. And I go, I'll remember that, Minnie.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're kind of in the Minnie situation now, where we're at a turning point where we could see different parts of us dying off at different periods of time. Certainly, ways of life we had are certainly going to change after this forever.
Mm-hmm.
Forever, I think. My wife does so much theater directing in Los Angeles. I think that could be hit very hard, because there isn't a huge money incentive to get that revved up again.
Yeah.
And you have a big audience, you have a lot of risk. So I don't know how that's going to happen, or the opera or the symphony. I don't know how that's coming back.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Stephen, hold on a second, okay?
Yep.
Okay. Stephen Tobolowsky is here, and he is one of my favorite guests ever, and he's a great actor. And we're talking about what's going on in the world right now, and how it's affecting Hollywood, and how it's affecting all of us. And we're here together, okay? We're all in this together. 312-981-7200, if you just want to jump in and talk to Stephen, one of the best character actors of all time, and a really great guy, and a fun guest, too. And okay, we'll talk more here on 720 WGN. All right. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4. keeping you company, keep you in informed, and we're all going to get through this together. Paul Farivar is going to join us a little bit later on, a very funny guy, and he'll be joining us. And we've got our regular Friday features as well. And we're talking with Stephen Tobolowsky. Stephen is one of my favorite actors, and we're talking about how what's going on in the world right now. So, Stephen, the business itself is obviously being affected, but not only that, but I mean, you know, we were talking about what it's going to be like after this is all over, and even going to the movies might change. I think they're doing temperature checks. That the idea is that if you go to the movies now, they're going to check your temperature to make sure that you don't have a fever or anything like that before you even go into the movies.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And I heard that, like, if a movie theater has, like, when they eventually reopen, if a movie theater has, like, a capacity of 400, they're only going to seat 200 if possible. So things like that. I mean, it's going to be changed. Just going to the movies is going to be different.
It's going to be. We started shooting one day at a time in January. In fact, I remember because the first episode we were shooting was when I had to fly to Chicago on the weekend to do the commercial in Woodstock for the Super Bowl.
Right.
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 With the Groundhog Day commercial.
Right.
So that was our first show. We ended up shooting six shows in a row. The fifth show we shot, the last two, we didn't have a studio audience. Again, like Minnie says, you die a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
So the first thing they did on the fifth show we did, we had an elaborate camera set up. So we were told we're not going to have an audience, even though there was a talk at Sony that coronavirus is in California and we may have to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
So we shot that fifth show with no studio audience. And the sixth show, we didn't have any special camera equipment. We just shot it without an audience because of the coronavirus. And I became acquainted with a career path, which I'd never seen before. And because I got this, you know, what do you do when you do a sitcom and you don't have a studio audience?
Right.
Usually the writers would sit there and laugh at their jokes. But now we have professional laughers. They have a captain or the head of the group comes and they go over the script with the executives and the writers. They watch a rehearsal of a scene. Then you bring in 6, 12, or 18 professional laughers. They all sit together and they laugh at the show. And they're good, Nick.
Yeah.
They're good. They're not bad. You know, they're... And they could do, they could do the little titter laugh,
right,
or the big belly laugh. They could do it all. And they're so good. And so as an actor, at first you feel like, oh, there's something unclean about this. And then you realize that little thing inside your head switches on and you go like, I want to make them laugh for real.
Yeah.
So you get those 18 people there and we go out and we try to make them laugh for real. And something I learned, which is really kind of beautiful, is that, do you know where a lot of laughter comes from sitcoms? Did you hear this apocryphal story?
No.
Well, the creator of the sitcom was Desi Arnaz.
Right.
Because Lucy was so brilliant, he thought that was the perfect venue for her. And Desi Arnaz recorded the studio audiences laughing. And to this day, to sweeten the soundtrack of live sitcoms like we're doing with One Day at a Time, they add some of the laughter from the original I Love Lucy show.
Is that right? Wow.
That and our professional laughers for the last two shows. And so it is a tribute to the genius of Desi Arnaz, who created the entire format of sitcom, that a little of his laughter is used in every show that's on television.
That's amazing. Sitcom, that's sitcom. Amazing. That's amazing. I had never heard that story before. That's really amazing.
Yeah.
It's hard, you know. You don't have an. I mean, there's no audiences. I happen to be a professional wrestling fan, Stephen, and they're continuing. They're continuing to do the shows, but no one's in the arenas.
Wow.
It's very strange. It's really strange, but that's the world we're living in right now, you know?
I've been asked to do, you know, because one of the last times I was in Chicago, I did my book tour thing,
right.
And I did some of my stories. They have asked me to do that at a theater here in Los Angeles and have the theater empty.
Mm.
That I come out and I do my stories for the empty theater, and they would film it. And then they would put it on television here in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
that's, you know, and it's like, I wonder what that's going to be like.
Yeah, it's going to be strange.
A little, it's like a dress rehearsal, I guess.
I guess, yeah. You have to look at it that way, you know. And yeah, that'll be interesting. We have someone who is calling in. This is Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Hey guys, how are you?
All right.
Okay, so I know it sounds a little silly, but I love your guys. I love your show, both shows. But the one day at a time, as a Hispanic and working in healthcare, I kind of look at the main character and I'm like, I understand like the struggle, you know, and it's like the desire to want to be more than just, you know, just the nurse. And it's like, you know, I'm going back to school and doing the same thing, and you know, I'm the sole income provider, you know, and it's like. You laugh at it and the issues you tackle. I mean, like my wife, you know, like just going into that field with addiction and different things like that. It's just so well done. It's been a joy to watch. And your guys' acting, your jokes. And I was disappointed when that show was pulled by Netflix. I was shocked because I was like, so one of their more popular shows is going off. I'm like, okay. I thought it was really funny when I don't remember what his name is on the show. It's kind of skipping my mind here, but the son jokes around about nothing good on Netflix. I'm like, ha! You and I both agree on that one.
That's Marcel Ruiz, yeah, and he plays the son on the show, and that particular joke from the first episode, oh, there's nothing good on Netflix, that wasn't in the original script. Nick, it was one of the most moving moments. We, you know, before we shoot the show in front of the live audience, we come out and we bow for the audience before we start.
Mm-hmm.
We got this enormous ovation before we started from fans who've come from all over the place to watch the show.
Yeah.
And it was so overwhelming that some of us started shedding a tear or two.
Yeah.
And we shot that first scene with Ray Romano there. And then one of the writers came up and just whispered in Marcel's ear about that particular joke.
Yeah.
Oh, there's nothing on Netflix now. And we did that in front of that audience, and they went nuts. It was delicious.
Yeah.
It was just wonderful.
Yeah. So, Dan, thank you for calling in, and thank you for what you do, man.
Thank
I know you're out on the front lines, my friend.
Hey, thank you. I do what I love, and I'm glad to put my life on the line because it's what I was meant to do, you know?
Yeah. Okay, Dan, be safe, okay, buddy?
Thank you, sir.
Okay. There you go. We got to thank these guys, man. They're out there on the front line.
Got to thank them, man.
Yep. No question about it. No question about it. You know, Stephen, I'm looking at your IMDb page.
Yeah.
Do you know how many credits you have?
No, sir.
272.
You know, and I don't. I did that. Live in front of a studio audience, the Jefferson.
Oh, that was so good. I hope they do it again.
Right.
It's so great.
They're threatening to, you know, but we'll have to see what happens here. So I call my agent, and he said, you know, you may be getting an offer today for this show. I said, well, I thought they'd been rehearsing already because we were going to go live in a week.
Yeah.
He says, well, you know, they're having trouble with this part. They may call you in to do this. So I said, sure. I said, well, should I send in my resume? And my agent pauses at Stephen. you don't have a resume. I said, I don't have a resume. He says, you don't have one anymore. I said, I've spent my whole life as an actor trying to build a resume. He goes, no. You don't have a resume anymore. I don't send resumes out. We don't have resumes. And I realized, Nick, it was a zen moment that as an actor, as a performer, you know, is like you spend your life trying to put together this piece of paper that says you belong here. Mm-hmm. When the truth of the matter is, when you really belong here, you don't have a piece of paper. They don't go by the resume anymore. Time for a quick little story about live in front of a studio audience.
Okay, you know what, Stephen? Why don't we take a quick break, okay, and then we can come back and tell the story, okay? All right, Stephen Tobolowsky is with us, and we're just talking and having some fun and talking about how the current situation with the coronavirus is affecting Hollywood and actors and things like that and getting that point of view. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and Stephen Tobolowsky is with us right here on 720 WGN. Right. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here till 4 o'clock, as we are every weekday morning, night into the morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. All of our regular features will be coming up a little bit later on. We're going to talk about how the McHenry Drive-In is going to be hosting graduation ceremonies, and also they open up for business this week, and you know, people want to get out and maybe see a movie, but you don't even have to get out of your car, and admission is going to be free tonight when they open up tonight, or I should say tomorrow, considering it's still Thursday, but Friday night. And also the news is next on the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Stephen Tobolowsky is with us, is a great actor, and you've seen him in a ton of things and movies and TV and stuff like that. It's always great to have him on. We're just chatting and talking about, you know, like what's going on in the world right now, how it's affecting Hollywood, and how it's affecting you and your family. Stephen, are you able to keep in contact with the rest of your kids and stuff?
Yeah. Now, you bring up a very good point about how the world has changed. My eldest son, Robert, in the last year, he graduated from UCLA, got his doctorate in chemistry, started teaching at UCLA. Now he's a professor over at Pierce.
You know, Stephen, I just want to say, man, you got some smart kids.
All of them in school were actors. They all acted in school.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
None of them. William became a doctor. Robert became organic chemist. And I go like, guys, I thought maybe one of you would be an actor. And William, my youngest, said, Dad, we saw how miserable your life turned out, and we wanted no part of it.
That's hilarious.
Children. They'll kill you, man. So anyway.
Yeah.
This is the truth. My eldest son in the last year has fallen in love, and he found the woman of his dreams, and now he can't get married.
Oh, man.
Because of the coronavirus. The city of Los Angeles is closed. And you know what was happening? He and Dejanay, his fiance, they were going back and forth as to how they were going to do the wedding, and Deja's mom wanted to get involved, and it did, and they weren't too sure how it was going to be, and so they kept putting off getting the damn license. And then the city of Los Angeles closes, and you can't get a license. And out here in Los Angeles, on the black market, they are selling marriage licenses for $10,000.
Are you kidding me?
You cannot get married. So what Robert and Dej did was they used the new law in California that was kind of earmarked for gay couples of saying, we'll be domestic partners. And they got their domestic partnership last week, which enables them to have most of the benefits of marriage, including sharing insurance. And if one of them goes to the hospital, you know, you go to the hospital with, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Marriage is important. And so anyway, that's one of the huge ramifications out here. It is affecting love.
Yeah.
And people are having to rethink how we're going to get married and have families and all these things. So that's been interesting.
I've never even thought about that. That didn't even occur to me. That's unbelievable. That was very smart thinking of them, you know, to the domestic partnership thing, so that they could get the benefits of being married. That's fantastic.
Right. Yeah. And they'll get married as soon as this whole thing ends.
Yeah. Wow. That's another interesting angle to take here. Stuff. So many interesting stories coming out of this thing, Stephen. You know, the way that people have to cope and change with what's happening in the world. It's fascinating to hear these stories. You know, I mean, I'm on the radio, Stephen. As you know, I'm on the radio every night, and I get to talk with my listeners, and I get to hear different stories. And it's really amazing to see what the world is now and how people are reacting to it and what they're doing and making adjustments. I love hearing these stories every night.
Yeah. No, it's amazing to watch the adaptation. And one thing I've learned about stories from all of this is that stories come from people. Very few stories really come from. And what I mean is, it's the human interaction, because with isolation and with people in lockdown, you have much fewer stories to tell.
Yeah.
You lose, again, like in theater, we were talking about the other person listening. You lose the human reflection of what happened, which is what makes a story a story.
Right.
It's the human take on it all.
Yeah. Now, Stephen, as one of the greatest storytellers of all time, and I mean that sincerely, you can tell a story like very few others. You were about to tell us a story before we took a break about shooting the live in front of a studio audience.
Right. So you're only going to be in front of 22 million people, and you have no time to rehearse. And so they pulled me out of the blue to play Harry Bentley, and We do the first day of rehearsal, and Jamie Foxx is there, and Wanda, and we're reading, and it's a great cast. And there's a scene where Jamie has to jump up and down on my back.
Right.
And so we do this read-through, and then Jim Burrows is going to block us through the scene this very first day, too. And one of the heads of Sony leans over and says, "Stephen, I just want you to know that you know how these things are cast. We've seen a lot of people for this role of Harry Bentley, but we've had trouble with it because we needed an actor big enough for Jamie to jump up and down on their back without having real injury." So I go like, so that's how I got the part, is that I'm 6'3", 200 pounds, and Jamie Foxx could jump on my back. So all you people who want a career in show business, the glamorous is that I'm a good pillow.
Yeah,
so,
that's great. By the way, that was
what
just,
I did was,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, what I did was, after we had the first rehearsal and Jamie was going, "Man, I feel bones here. I feel like he's all squishy. I think he's going to go right to the floor." I went to the costumer. I said, "I don't want Jamie to know this because I don't want to affect his performance. Do you have anything like hockey pads or anything like that you could sew into my underwear?" And so they sewed in ice hockey pads into my underpants and into my undershirt so Jamie could jump up and I never told Jamie, so he could jump up and down on my back and I wouldn't die.
The wonderful world of hockey pads. Geez.
That's right.
That's amazing. That is amazing. By the way, I just think that Jimmy Kimmel and Norman Lear should be thanked for putting those two specials on. They were so nostalgic and so much fun to watch, and I love the fact that many of those episodes were as timely now as they were back in the 70s. For people who don't know, this was called Live in Front of a Studio Audience, where they recast All in the Family The Jeffersons on one episode, and then it was All in the Family. And what was the other one?
I think Good Times.
Yeah, Good Times, exactly. Good Times, yeah. So they took actual episodes from the 70s, word for word, recast it with modern actors, and performed it live, absolutely live on television, in front of a studio audience, but also live. And it was just great, especially for, you know, people who are around my age who grew up watching those shows in the 70s. And everybody was so good. But I really want to point out how amazing Marisa Tomei was as Edith. She was
wonderful.
So great. You know, and she's always great, but my God, she was so good as Edith.
Always great.
Yeah.
Well, just amazing and just beautiful. And she made me cry.
Yeah.
You know, when she sang that song with Woody. You know, but she sang it with such passion and soul, and you could really see Edith coming. It was just beautiful.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. And they had it was the exact set from All in the Family and the exact set of the Jeffersons. And it may have been that the exact sets are in a museum somewhere,
mm-hmm.
but they were built to be absolute duplicates of those sets to
yeah.
the inch.
Yeah.
With the same fabric. Everything was exactly the same.
It looked exactly the same. I mean, it looked exactly the same. I mean, obviously, Archie Bunker's chair is in the Smithsonian. So obviously
right.
they weren't going to use the original chair, but they did recreate it beautifully. And I hope they do it again. We have a caller here. It's Taxi Driver Bob. Bob, go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys doing? It's a real pleasure to speak to you, Stephen. I'm a big fan of yours. One of my favorite shows that I've watched over and over again, an episode to my best buddy. He's just, he was enamored with Californication.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd throw that in.
Yeah.
I just think that you're really a genuine, great actor. I really enjoy your work. But my question is, and I think that you probably would have a lot of insight into it, is, I mean, this whole, you know, crisis we're going through, how do you think that the movie industry is going to ease back into making movies, and when, and how, and all that? I'm kind of curious as to your insight on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been talking a little bit about that, Stephen. Bob, thank you for the call. So, you know, it's going to be slow. It's going to be slow going, right?
It's going to be slow, and there's going to be... Logically, it feels like that what we may come back with at the beginning are smaller character movies rather than movies where people are in the middle of a big city with hundreds of extras,
right.
et cetera, et cetera.
Right, right.
You know, those big special. I could see it coming back, which could be great. You could have more films like A Patch of Blue.
Sure.
Where, you know, it's a small, powerful movie with really five or six main characters, and the film jives with that. You may have more like that and less of the big action. Well, you could have with so much CG now,
right, the
CGI.
The CGI stuff could really come into play, you know? So
definitely. Yeah. And it'll make the writers have a lot of imagination to see where we're going to go with that.
Okay. Stephen, can you hang out with us?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
All right, good. Stephen Tobolowsky is with us. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll come back and talk more with Stephen and about the current situation that we're all going through, and we're all going through it together. And we're going to talk some fun entertainment stuff, too, here on 720 WGN.
When I think of those Eastern lights, muggy nights, the curtains drawn in the little room downstairs. Prima donna, Lord, you really should have been there, sitting like a princess perched in her electric chair. And just one more beer and I don't hear you.
Such a great song, and it should have been in Rocket Man. but it wasn't for some reason. A great movie, though, Rocket Man. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Friday. That means all of our regular Friday features starting at 3 o'clock, straight out of context. Nick D Show spies you, big dummy. And Fly Jams Friday, where we get funky. Paul Farivar is going to join us. Very funny guy, and he'll be joining us after 1 o'clock. But hanging out with us again is Stephen Tobolowsky. Thank you so much for sticking with us, Stephen. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Nick.
Yeah, it's so great to talk to you again. It's been too long.
I know.
Yeah. So let me ask you about the Goldbergs, because I have a couple of TV screens here in the studio that are turned to our local WGN affiliate here in Chicago, Channel 9, and they show back-to-back Goldbergs right around while I'm here late at night, and so I get to see your lovely face pretty regularly right here on the screen next to me. So how do you like working on the Goldbergs?
Oh, I love working on the Goldbergs. Besides the fact the scripts are always funny, and I get to work with Wendy most of the time.
God, she's so funny. She is so funny, and she actually has my favorite performance in Bridesmaids is her. And I know that's weird. But
God, yes.
She's my favorite performance in that movie.
Oh yeah. and I like the people are absolutely chill, total professionals. I think it was a couple seasons ago. I've been doing this is their seventh season, and I started being the principal kind of around season two.
Yeah.
So I've done kind of six seasons, a few shows each year. So it was like two or three seasons ago, this is like how professional they are. Before I had to go in and shoot, I was taking my little daily constitutional to the walk, did a little park down the street, and I tripped on something, I fell, and I had to utter the line, "I've fallen, and I can't get up."
Oh, no.
I couldn't get up, and I drew a crowd, and I got up, and I was so humiliated, I hopped on one leg home, and I called up my agent, and I said, "This is terrible. I don't know what I did," and what I ended up doing, I found later, was I tore my meniscus on my knee. Oh,
oof.
Yeah. So I couldn't walk at all. So I called in and I said, "This has never happened to me before. We got to call the Goldbergs. I have to shoot the Goldbergs tomorrow. I can't walk. I cannot go in." So Goldbergs calls me back, said, "Not a problem, Steve. This is not an issue at all. I tell you what, you just get in your car, you drive, you tell us when you're arriving. We're going to get a golf cart to meet you at your car. We're going to drive you to your trailer. You get dressed, then we're going to drive you to the set, and we'll figure something out." So I couldn't really even stand up. So the way they shot our scene was they had me leaning against the wall in the hallway like I was just waiting there for Beverly Goldberg to walk by. I go, "Excuse me, Mrs. Goldberg," and I do the whole scene leaning against the wall, and they go, "Thank you, Stephen. You did it great. You can go home." Yeah. So, I mean, they work out everything.
That's great. And
it is such a delightful show, and they used to have the best. I always judge shows by the snack table. You could always tell when a show is doing well by the snack. And Goldberg always had primo snacks. The worst snacks I ever got was a Disney movie we were shooting in the Bahamas, and all they had was a bowl of carrot sticks in cold water and another bowl of bubble gum.
Oh,
that was their snack. She had the choice of one or two. It was, and I go like, "Well, this movie's going to be no good." But Goldberg's had the primo snack.
Yeah. I got to say, Jeff Garland, Chicagoan, been on the show several times, one of the funniest people on the planet. And here's what I notice a lot while the show is on here, and because I sometimes get distracted, I look over at the TV and see what's on, is that he's aggressively pantsless in that show a lot.
Aggressively pantsless. Yes, it hurts my soul whenever that happens. I go like, "Oh my God."
That's one thing I keep noticing. Every time I turn, I see Jeff with no pants on. I'm like, "Okay, there we go. There it is."
I just find it an amazing tribute. Adam Goldberg, who has had so many successes on television, again, he turns to this private little personal story of him as the little kid with the camera when he was 10, 11, 12 years of age, filming these videos of his childhood. And that is the gold of that show.
Yeah.
Is that you can watch the talent, them doing the sitcom version of his talent show when he's in eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the show, you see the real video he took of when he was in eighth grade doing the talent show. It's mind blowing.
That's my favorite. That's always my favorite part of the show is the real videos at the end. It's really, very, very cool. Very, very cool. Well, you do a great job on that show, Stephen. Very funny stuff.
Oh, thank
you. Okay.
We're
going to take a break.
Do you have time first?
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back, okay? Stephen Tobolowsky is here. It's one of the best. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, talking about his career and talking about how the coronavirus is affecting life in Hollywood and shutting down, you know, the business that really, you know, flows through Hollywood and all of that stuff. Because obviously this this pandemic is affecting all of us, and it's affecting businesses everywhere. But I also, a little bit later on, we're going to talk about how the McHenry Outdoor Theater is doing some really, really great stuff. And they're going to reopen. You can go to the movies. You can see, what are they showing? They're showing the Flintstones and Jurassic Park. And tonight is free. If you go tonight, opening night of the McHenry Drive-In, and we all, you know, people want to get out, people want to go to the movies, all you got to do is stay in your car. And they will bring a food cart over to you. The concession stand will be closed. There will be distancing if you need to use the restroom. Hand sanitizers will be available, all of that stuff. So it'll be safe. They've gone through all of it, and it's going to be opening tonight, the McHenry Drive-In, and it's free for tonight only. And they're going to be hosting graduation ceremonies and all kinds of cool stuff. So some of the businesses are doing a great job. And we got to cope. That's what's happening. 312-981-7200 if you want to talk to Stephen Tobolowsky. And we'll hear more great stories from Stephen after this. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are here live, keeping you informed, keeping you company, and getting through this. We're going to get through this together, and WGN is here for you 24/7. We are going to talk with a very funny guy, Paul Farvarar. And he is going to keep us laughing. We're also going to play back some classic Johnny Carson at 2:30 from 1978. Another visit from the great Carnac, the magnificent. And we're going to celebrate Mother's Day by talking about some of the best TV moms of all time and all the regular Friday features. Our good friend and great actor Stephen Tobolowsky is with us. Always a thrill to have him on the show. Stephen, thanks again for sticking around. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Nick.
Okay, before the break, you were about to tell another story. What was that one? What was that one? Were you going to tell us?
Since last I saw you, I had a Zen moment.
Okay.
And you brought up the Goldbergs.
Yes.
And so the part I play on that is Principal Earl Ball. And then they did a spinoff called Schooled, which is 10 years later. So this last year, Goldbergs has been passing me from Goldbergs to Schooled and back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was doing an episode of School. And on the show that week was a kid. It was his first job. He was 17 years old. His father was with him. He had no lines in the show, but he had to high five one of the leading kids on School. And so the father came up to me and said, "Can you give my son any advice to help him out on what to say?" And I was going to give him my standard advice, you know, take acting classes, you know, don't be, you know, work hard, things will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, in that moment, I thought back to my first job, and I saw something I never saw before. The first job I had on television was for the TV show Alice. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, sure,
that.
Of course, yeah. Linda Lavin, Alice, and Vic Tayback. I love that show.
You got it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I got a call from the casting director of that show, Mindy Marin. This is back in the old days, no cell phone. She called me at home,
mm-hmm.
and she said they lost their wild rock and roll DJ for the show was supposed to be based on Wolfman Jack. It was called Caveman Carl. And she said, can you come in and read through Caveman Carl with Beth Howland, who's on the show, and you'll do your scene with her and let the director and producer, we're shooting the show now. So if you come in and the director and producer, like, you learn the lines, we'll put you in hair and makeup, get you in costume, and we'll shoot the show in like 3-4 hours. And I go, sure, Mindy, thank you. So I went in, I read with Beth, I got the part, they put me in hair and makeup, and it was only until I was on the set of School that I realized, wait a minute, here's the real advice to give to the little boy on School. Mindy Maron did not call me in to read for Caveman Carl when she was first casting the show. I had had maybe 5 or 6 auditions with Mindy in the past and never got a call back. Mm-hmm. I never even got an attaboy, good job, nothing. Mm. And as an actor, young actor, I beat myself up, you know, with each one of those.
Yeah.
It's a major loss, crushes your spirit, crushes your soul, you've lost. And here she calls me at home, not because of my victories, but because of my defeats. I get the job of Caveman Carl because of my failed auditions with Mindy Maron, not with any of my successes. And if we're able to look at our lives and not beat ourselves up so much for our failures, because sometimes our failures are making a positive impression on the people around us and on the world, I think it would make our whole view of the world look different.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. So that's the advice you gave to the 17-year-old kid?
Yes. You can't be don't be discouraged by your failures, because you're going to have a lot of them at the beginning of your career, and you don't know who you're impressing with your failures.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's a great story. Great story. Stephen Tobolowsky is with us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Stephen, let me ask you this. Do you ever get sick of talking about Groundhog Day?
Oh, no, it's such a great movie.
Yeah.
And it's, you know what I did this year? This is something else, you know, we did not discuss this. So I'm doing the first show of One Day at a Time, and I get a call from my manager saying, you may have to go do a commercial.
Right.
Either in New York or Chicago this weekend. I said, well, that's impossible, because I'm doing a network run through on Friday. We do camera blocking on Monday. I can't get to either of those places and back and 2 days and work Saturday and Sunday. And then my agent said, well, it may be for Groundhog Day, a commercial for Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if you could get them to work me only on Saturday, I'll try to get there Friday night. So I got to Chicago. I left rehearsal, got to Chicago Friday night about 11:20. And that's when Bill Murray at our little hotel came down to the bar to say hello to me, and we sat down, and we reminisced about Groundhog Day.
Mm.
Bill and I reminisced about Groundhog Day for about an hour that night, and Bill said, what do you remember from the first day of shooting? Because we began shooting our street scene that very first day, and I started telling Bill stories from that first day, and he says, you're kidding, I did that? And I go, yeah, you did that, Bill. I told Bill the story of how the first thing he did is we're walking out onto the street. There are about 500 people from the town of Woodstock, Illinois, to watch us shoot.
Yeah.
And Bill looked out at the crowd and says, looks like what these people need are donuts. And he grabbed me and pulled me into the donut shop, pulled a wad of money out of his pocket, put it on the table and said, give me every donut, every muffin you have in the store. And Bill yelled to me, he says, you carry him. And so I stick my arms out, and they do all these boxes of donuts, and Bill comes out and starts throwing donuts and muffins out to the crowd of 500 people like fish to seals. And they're all screaming, yes, yes, yes. And I'm going like, what a brilliant move to get the entire town on our side.
Yeah.
And Bill goes, I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill, you did that.
He didn't remember, huh?
No.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, it's just such a great movie, and it's become, you know, in my opinion, Stephen, I think it's an American classic. It's a timeless movie that's just going to go on and on and on, and decades from now, people are still going to watch it and go, man, that's a special movie. It really is.
Yeah, I told Bill, I said, you know why it's timeless, besides you and besides the fact the movie's so damn good, is that we shot it in the winter time when it was freezing, so winter fashions don't change as much as summer fashions. So everybody is just wearing overcoats and sweater and puffer vests. So it looks like every winter you've ever seen up around Chicago.
Yeah.
The look never changes. So it looks timeless as well.
Yeah. And it is such a great, and you know, and Harold Ramis, you know, what a devastating loss to the world. He's one of my comedy icons. I mean, His name is on the credits of what I consider the Holy Trinity of comedy, and that would be Caddyshack, Animal House, and Stripes. And his name is on the credits of all three of those movies.
One of the one things that Harold Ramis taught, two things Harold Ramis taught me. I said, when we first day of Groundhog Day, we shot the master shot of me and Bill, and I said, Harold, am I too broad in this? I feel like my character is so big it would play in the Roman Colosseum. He goes, Stephen, in comedy, you got the stew and you got the spice in the stew. Bill is the stew. You're the spice in the stew. You could be as big as you want. Bill has to play it straight. So figure out in a comedy scene if you're the stew or the spice in the stew. So I thought that was great. And another thing Harold taught me in terms of directing comedy for film, he says, comedy always lives in the two shot. Don't get caught up with doing close-ups. And if you watch Groundhog Day, it's almost all two shots, certainly with me and Bill and with Bill and Andy. It's only at the end when it gets kind of romantic, Harold starts going to close-ups.
Yeah.
Comedy lives in the two shot because you have to see the reaction that you don't get on Zoom. You have to see the silent person, Bill, reacting to me on the street is what makes it so funny.
And I watched a documentary about the making of Groundhog Day. And they interviewed Harold, and Harold mentioned your spin that you do after you get punched by Bill.
Right.
And and you spin so perfectly that you even get to mug the camera before you fall down. And Harold Ramis was like, he's like, Tobolowsky was shameless. He does that whole spin just so he could mug to the camera before he goes down. And it's hilarious. It's brilliant.
Well, I asked Harold, I said, like, well, where do you want me to look before I fall? You know, Bill will hit me, I'll spin, and where do you want me to look? And Harold says, you could do that? I said, well, I'm not going to get hit. I'm going to do a dancer turn, and I'm going to stop and look at whatever you want me to look at, and then I'll fall out of frame. He says, well, look at the courthouse. I said, okay, so what's in the movie is the first take. Is the first take where Bill hit me, turn, look at the courthouse, fall out of frame.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just boom, 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 and Bill executes the punch perfectly. He came about 10 inches from my face, but the camera lens foreshortens the distance and makes it look like he punches me.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful scene and a great pratfall. Stephen, hang on, okay?
Yep.
Stephen Tobolowsky is with us. He's great. Terrific actor, wonderful guy. And we've been talking about how the coronavirus has affected Hollywood, and we're reminiscing about some of the stuff and some of the movies and TV shows that he's been in. And if you want to jump in and you got a question or a comment for Stephen, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio on 720 WGN here until 4 a.m. All the regular Friday features are coming up here on WGN. Stephen Tobolowsky is with us, a terrific actor. Stephen, I just want you to know that the Goldbergs are on right now.
Oh, there you go. Ka-ching.
Ka-ching. Oh, man. You know, I just wanted to mention really quickly that you worked with Christopher Nolan before he became Christopher Nolan. Was that it? Was it because you were in Memento, and such a great part, too.
Right.
Did you enjoy doing that?
Yeah, I remember I began reading the most screenplays, Nick, they're 120 pages, right? That's the formula.
Yeah.
120 pages, it's a minute a page, and the producers like it if you really get that first script to maybe 104 pages.
Right.
The first script of Memento was about 300 plus pages long.
Oh, my God.
It's like Gone with the Wind. And I'm looking at this, I'm going like, this has to be the worst damn script in the world. I mean, how do you have a script this huge? You can't shoot this.
Yeah.
So every page had the exact detail on how they were going to shoot it over the shoulder. It's going to look exactly like the scene before it and the scene after, you know, all this description.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm reading the script, and Annie asked me about halfway through, how is it? I go, well, right now, it's like the best script I've ever read in my life, but I know it's going to disappoint me because they can't keep this up. They got to the end. I threw the script across the room. Annie says, like, bad. I go, best damn script I ever read.
Yeah.
I called up my agent. I said, I need to go in on this Memento. So get me a meeting with Chris Nolan for this. So I went to meet Chris for the part of the Sammy Jenkins with Amnesia. And Chris said, well, Stephen, thanks for coming in, but, you know, there isn't really a lot for you to read. I said, well, I'm not going to read for you. I'm just going to say this. This is one of the best scripts I ever read, and you're going to have a lot of people that want to be in this movie, but I am going to be the only one you are going to meet that has actually had amnesia.
Mm.
And Chris says, you've had amnesia? I go, yes, I had a kidney stone, and they were going to do surgery on me. And they used an experimental drug on me, what they do with big guys, to where they don't put you out, but they give you amnesia. So you experience the pain, but you forget about it. So they could say, could you please, have you heard of this stuff?
No.
So they say, please walk into the operating room, and you forget, please get on the table. Okay, this is going to hurt, but you're not going to remember it. So, but like any general anesthetic, it takes like 2 or 3 days for it to work out of your body. So after I got home, I'd be in my dining room, and I'd be standing there holding a glass that was half full of water. Is it half full or half empty? Well, I didn't know if I had just drunk half of the water and was going to fill it up again, or if I was going to just put it in the... I didn't know if I had any water or not. I would find myself standing over the toilet with little Stephen, and I did not know if I had gone or not gone.
Oh, my God.
And then Annie yells from the bedroom, you finished. You finished 10 minutes ago. Zip it up and come to bed. You know, that you forget instantly. So when I was doing Memento, I said to Chris, I'm going to do it exactly like when I had amnesia, because you're stuck as it. And then I learned a very important lesson, you know, the old Marlon Brando joke, it's the motivation.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that's what drives you through the scene. And when you have amnesia, you have no motivation.
Well, yeah,
you don't know where you are or what's happening. And so you have to just sit there and do nothing. But That film was magnificent, and I loved working with Chris on that. That was wonderful.
Yeah, what a great story again. We have people who are calling in. It's Beth on WGN. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
First of all, don't you wish we had that drug after all our divorces?
Well, yeah. Yeah. All right, Beth, what do you got?
I wanted to thank the guest for his anecdotes, because I'm learning so much and getting so nostalgic. He's like, he just blazes it out there, like take an awkward moment and turn it into a movie role.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir.
Well, there you go. Just a big thank you to Stephen.
Thank you.
All right. All right, Beth, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much, Beth.
Yeah. 312-981-7200 is Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Want to ask Stephen. Stephen, I've never seen you before other than the Groundhog commercial for Fiat Chrysler. And I was wondering, did you get paid along with Chris Elliott and Andy McDowell for that Chrysler commercial?
Well, yeah.
Yes, I in fact, I mean, if we're going to get, I mean, I'm not going to say how much I got paid, but yeah. I got paid more for doing the commercial than I did for the whole movie of doing Groundhog Day.
You did. You got paid more for the commercial than the movie.
Yeah, well, you know, because the movie, as you said, is now iconic. So you know, they're paying for icon.
Mm-hmm. What's it like to work with Chris Elliott?
Oh, Chris is fantastic. We used to bump into each other a lot over on the CBS Radford lot, and we would just, he was working on one show and I was working on another, and we'd always sit and just tell each other kind of the nightmares we were going through on our different shows.
Yeah.
But it was so great working with him on that show, and he was always funny, always in a great mood, and Andy was very dear. Andy, when the movie premiered, Andy called me up and asked me if I'd take her to the premiere to keep the guys away from her. I guess I was an anti-guy magnet.
Yeah.
I don't know what. So Andy and I went to the first screening of Groundhog Day together, and she's just a magnificent person.
And she's luminous in that movie. I mean, it's just, she's
luminous.
Just beautiful. Tom, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and Stephen Tobolowsky is here. And what are the feelings in LA right now? Are people feeling, are they optimistic about the situation that we're all in?
I don't think so.
No.
But again, this is one of the things about isolation and being in the lockdown, sort of, is you don't really get to connect. You don't get the temperature of the whole city like you used to by driving across town, going to Sony and working on the lot. It's all piecemeal, and you don't hear, all of your favorite places are closed. You hope that when this is over, some of them still exist.
Yeah.
You do, like, I got a coffee guy down the street, and instead of getting coffee at the grocery store, I make sure that I go over there every week and buy my coffee. He's open at 6 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and I go over and buy my bags of coffee, and they got it all safe, you know, where you can, I call them up, I said, I'm on my way, they have everything ready, I come in, stick my card in, get my coffee, and go. And I want to make sure that these people are there when this whole thing is over.
Right.
Because I'm worried about the guys who have the small shops.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't see how they could keep going.
Absolutely. And I have, you know, I used to bartend, and, you know, and I have friends who wait tables and bartend, and they're, you know, obviously restaurants and bars are taking it, you know, on the chin here. You know, one of my favorite restaurants in the city, my favorite restaurant in the city is a place called the Gale Street Inn, and they just started doing curbside. So they're still cooking. They got a small staff in there. You can pull up safely, no contact, and get your first, and they have like the best ribs in the city, and people want those ribs, and they're doing really well. People are showing up, and so I mean, you can get a little taste of it. But a lot of these small, you know, businesses are really taking it on. I think it's really nice of you to go and buy your coffee from a small business like that. That's great.
You just, it's nothing, but you got to do what you could do to try to keep the world as you know it there when you come back to it.
Yeah.
And something Annie, my wife, said yesterday morning, she was beginning, you know, we begin our chores at like 6 in the morning. She was going like, what did I expect from this life? My parents had things so much worse. They had a depression. They had a world war. And she said, my life has been so blessed up until this point. And now, you know, there's danger and there's catastrophe and there's uncertainty. There's always been. And I thought, here's a musical little thing. Beethoven, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beethoven writing the fifth piano concerto, one of the greatest pieces of music in the world, in the middle of a war. Napoleon is entering the city where Beethoven lives. He's bombing the city, and Beethoven changes the name of his piece of music from the Fifth Piano Concerto to the Emperor Concerto to try to court the favor of Napoleon in case Beethoven is killed in the bombardment. Napoleon would look favorably upon his music, and his music would live.
Mm. Wow.
And I think, you know, every age has had its nightmares and its troubles. And I think, like you said at the very beginning of our talk tonight, it's the trouble that makes us think outside the box, and it's the difficulties that make us see things differently and put the pieces together differently and maybe come up with solutions that we never would have imagined.
Yeah. And I think that I have a feeling that that's going to stick with us. I really do. I really do. I think we're all going to change because of this. I think we have to. Stephen, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Stephen Tobolowsky is with us, and he's a terrific actor, great storyteller. And if you want to say anything to him, you can call us at 312-981-7200. A little more talk with Stephen coming up right here on 720 WGN. All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here till 4 a.m., as we are every weekday morning from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. It's Friday. All the regular Friday features will be coming up. Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly Jams Friday. So get your requests ready because Luscious Hushes will be playing the jams. Also coming up, the very funny, after 1 o'clock, we'll talk with the very funny Paul Farivar. There you go. Right now we are talking with, oh, and by the way, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're talking with actor Stephen Tobolowsky, who is one of my favorite guests ever and a great friend of the show. Stephen, thanks for taking the time to be on the show with us.
Oh, I love talking to you, Nick. It's been, like I said, it's been too long since I've seen you.
Yeah, it really has, and we'll have to get you on the air a little bit more often than we have in the past. So, besides One Day at a Time, did you have anything else in the horizon that you were going to be working on?
Let's see. Well, this last year, like I said, I was doing Goldbergs and Schooled, and since they all take place at Sony, the executives at Sony would have me working the same days I was doing One Day at a Time. Mm. So I'd show up for Schooled at 5:45 in the morning, shoot Schooled until 11, jump over to One Day at a Time, rehearse One Day at a Time to maybe 4 or 5, go home that night, come back, do the Goldbergs the next morning. You know, it was a crazy schedule.
Yeah, jeez.
I was just offered a film that I don't think I can do. I was just offered to film a wonderful part and a really delightful film, but it shoots in December in New Jersey. Mm. And I'm going like, I don't know if I could commit to that and take that chance right now.
Mm-hmm.
It may be better just to kind of wait and see what's happening and does make sure everything is safe, because like I said, I got the target on my back, you know.
Yeah.
It's too frightening, you know, the prospect. I realize that a lot in our life, when we're young, we definitely choose the way we want to live. But I do think that as we get older, we also choose the ways we want to die. And I have lived with friends of mine, and I saw it happening as they would pick little modes of self-destruction, and they would dip their toe in that water and thinking like, yeah, this may be a way I want to go. And it gets to where the undertow is too strong, and you cannot help yourself. You're on that path to destruction. And for me, I just want to hang around as long as I can, and I'd rather live in the garden that I don't have a resume anymore, Nick.
That's right.
I don't have to do the show in New Jersey.
Right.
You know, I could just hang here. Dick Wolf did mention maybe bringing me back to do some more Law and Orders. That would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
That show is amazing to do. That's like a machine. That's like crazy.
Yeah.
How they do that show. It's brilliant. But you know, I'm writing now, so I may do another book. It'll just be, I realize one of the biggest, people ask me, what is the moment you had on stage that was the most important?
Mm-hmm.
And I think back, and it wasn't first night on Broadway, and it wasn't my first lead role. No, it was when I was at SMU. I was a freshman, and I had 10 words in Act One. I played a part called the Intendant in Caligula, and I had 10 words, and I didn't know what an Intendant was, but I even counted words back then. And when you have a part that's so insignificant, that a lot of times directors put you in another insignificant part in the show.
Right. Yep.
And so they put me in as a slave boy that came in at the end, and it's one of the people that beats Caligula to death. And the slave boys, we wore a bald pate, covered ourselves with silver grease paint, and wore little silver jockey straps. That's all we wore.
Mm-hmm.
So our director definitely had a vision, and this was years before Chippendales. So there were about 12 of us slave boys. And the first night we were supposed to kill Caligula, we had these wax capsules that were filled with Cairo syrup and red food coloring, right? The recipe for blood.
Yep.
And the warmth of our hands softens the capsule. We beat them with our fists, and then blood starts flying, and it's shocking to the audience. Well, the designers the second night thought that the blood didn't have the proper viscosity. And without consulting a physics professor, they changed the formula from Cairo syrup and food coloring to KY jelly and food coloring.
Oh,
so we go. We don't know what's happening. We're on a Mylar set that's raked toward the audience. So all of us slave boys covered with silver grease paint, we go out and we start beating up Caligula with, and KY jelly starts squirting all over the stage, and we realize we're moving. We're starting, the slave boys and the dead Caligula are starting to slide down the stage toward the audience. And just like Minnie said, you don't die all at once. We realized we were in a catastrophe in stages. First thing I realized, oh, I'm moving. Then I realized, oh, everybody on stage is moving. And then it's like, oh, we're picking up speed and we're going to end up in the audience. And the same thing happened to the audience. They got it in phases, too. They're going like, first of all, they laughed. Oh, look, the kids are tripping on stage and they're sliding. Oh, they're sliding toward us. Oh, my God. So the people on the panic started in the theater, and people on the front rows ran to the exits. But some of the people, the heroes, Nick, they ran toward the stage to try to keep the kids from falling into the orchestra pit.
Yeah.
And at that moment, what was so special about that night, besides the natural catastrophe, and we eventually got off stage and the audience applauded madly when we were able to climb over one another and get off the stage, was we were unified, not by fear, but we were unified by doubt.
Mm.
Because no one knew if we were going to get to the end of the show or if anyone would get killed.
Yeah.
Both the audience and the people on stage, we were unified by doubt, and this show is special to me because it taught me that our beliefs, our science, our art, and our faith are all generated by not knowledge, but by doubt.
Wow.
That's what drives us forward, and that's what changed my life. That was the most important performance I ever had.
Wow. That's amazing, Stephen. Let's see. We got another call here. It's from Doc. Hey, Doc, go ahead.
Hey, Stephen, love your work, especially on Californication. But, hey, I got a question. Have you ever been on Saturday Night Live? Would you like to be? What's up with that?
No, I never been on Saturday Night Live. I did work with Will Ferrell on a live in front of a studio audience, and I asked him about that. I said, what's that like? And he said, oh, it's a blood sport. Just anytime you do live television, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, no, I haven't, but it would be an interesting experiment to do sometime. That live television is like nothing you've ever done.
Absolutely.
It's,
Doc,
it's
thank you.
Crazy.
Thank you, Doc.
All right, man.
All right, take care. I would love to see you on Saturday Night Live. I happen to be obsessed with Saturday Night Live since it debuted in 1975. I've watched every single episode, yeah. And I DVR it and I watch it all the time. I think you'd be fantastic on SNL.
It would be something that it would kind of fit my skill set, but it was, you know, now that I've had a taste of live, and Will, Will Ferrell was telling me some of the stories of some of the disasters on that show.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you have to have that kind of little devil-may-care attitude of, well, the sky will fall, but, you know, the sun will come out tomorrow. You have to have that attitude about it. It's amazing knowing that you're on the high trapeze without a net. It's an amazing experience.
It's one of the reasons why I love watching that show, because anything can happen.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I think it's so special. And I'm always amazed at what they do on that show. Now, you know, there are clunkers, because you walk in there on a Monday, you got nothing. You got a live show on Saturday. So, you know, they have to write it. They have to put it all together. And I mean, the way that show is put together is astonishing to me. And, you know, I love to watch it. I really do. And it would be awesome if you were on that. Listen, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us, man. Stay safe, stay in, and we'll all get through this together. Okay.
You too, Nick. You be careful. And I love you guys. I love you. And nice talking to you again.
Yeah, we'll do it sooner than later. Okay, Stephen.
Okay, man. You got it.
Okay. Take care. Stephen Tobolowsky. Truly one of my favorite guests ever on this show, and a great actor, and he's got 272 credits. So there's a lot of stuff out there that you can watch Stephen in, and I suggest you do, because he's fantastic. And if you haven't seen Groundhog Day in a while, you should just pop it in, because it's just such a lovely movie. So anyway, thank you, Stephen. He's the best. We got a break here. We got the news coming up, and then the very funny Paul Farvar is going to be joining us, so we'll talk to him right after the news.